Ladies, welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is a special division. We're here to hear one case, which is People v. Baxter. I see counsel are present and ready at counsel table. I think we have experienced counsel here, so I will just remind you that arguments are 15 minutes per side. Appellant, you may reserve any amount of time you want for rebuttal. And again, also to remind you, we have read the briefs and are familiar at least with some part of the record. Please take that in mind when you make your arguments, which of course will go very quickly. You may proceed.
Your Honor, you want entries of appearance?
I'm sorry?
You want entries of appearance?
Please, for the record.
David Jones from the Arapahoe County District Attorney's Office, appearing on behalf of the people.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Gregory Graff. I'm an alternate defense counsel. I usually do that work in
Thank you.
Your Honor, if it pleases the court, counsel, the issue presented here is really one of a confusion of the administrative sanctions that can be administered by the Department of Corrections, specifically YOS, and the statutory procedures for revocation when someone is in a phase three of YOS. Specifically in this case, Alan Baxter was sentenced in 2004 to the Department of Corrections to be served at the youth offender system. He progressed through that system successfully through up to phase three, and 45 days before his successful
He was originally sentenced to the Department of Corrections, which was suspended on the basis of him going to YOS.
Correct. YOS, I need to make this distinction. YOS is a program within DOC. It is not a facility on its own, much like ComCorps or probation. These are their own entity, whereas YOS is a program within DOC, which is why we go through that process of you're sentenced to DOC, that's suspended upon successful completion of the program within DOC called the youthful offender system.
I have a slightly different question. When you talked about successful completion, who decides that? Is there some formal document that has to be lodged to indicate successful completion? Is that a fact-specific determination? How does that work?
The department itself reviews each individual, and they make the determination of whether or not the person has successfully completed.
Do they have to file something with somebody?
To my knowledge, they don't, but I can't say for certain as to what procedure they go through. I believe they do file a document that certifies they have successfully completed, because that is the trigger that allows an individual who's an offender to lose his term of DOC. In other words, the 10-year suspended sentence is terminated after the successful completion pursuant to 18.1.3407.
Who actually makes that determination?
The Department of Corrections. Much like a individual who is sentenced to the Department of Corrections prison, they will go through the entire process without court intervention if they are successful. And that same thing applies to YOS. The court only becomes involved if there is a claim that they have not been successful. So what happened here is that 45 days prior to his anticipated release, he went through a spree of violations while on phase three, which is the community parole phase of YOS. Those violations were of a serious nature. Not just the fact that he went to a strip club that served alcohol, not just the fact that he was alone with a 3.5-year-old, but also he committed a new crime, child neglect, wherein he left that 3.5-year-old child locked in the back seat of his car, or actually the girl's mother's car, and went into the strip club, left her there, or told her that she was to stay in that car. In fact, when police came, she was afraid to go with the police for fear that he would be angry. When that came to light to the parole officer, she arrested him. It was approximately 5 days later, and began the administrative procedures the administrative procedures for internal sanctions. Now, there's two different lines of thought here, and it's much like in Valdez. And Chief Judge Davidson, I know that you're a participant in that case, and those distinctions are drawn in that case. There's an administrative sanctions procedure, which is internal to YOS, and then there's the statutory revocation procedures, and they are distinct. Now, some of the procedures that occur during these overlap, but the procedures have to be defined. She starts the administrative sanctions procedures, and the defendant ultimately pleads guilty to his new crime, and an administrative law judge hears the allegations for that administrative sanction and finds him guilty of the charges that the parole officer presented. Now, within that administrative sanctions portion, the administrative law judge said, I'm only going to suspend your good time. And that's all that is done by the administrative law judge as far as an administrative sanction. But that's not dispositive of the issue of revocation of the YOS.
What does it mean? I'm not sure I've got the term right, but the ALJ didn't regress, is that the word, the offender back to DOC. And I think the trial judge made a lot of that determination.
The trial judge did, and I think that's why when I started, I said there was some confusion as to the distinctions. And I think the trial judge did confuse the distinction. The ALJ can, as part of that administrative procedure, refer it for revocation or regress the person and make a referral that the person be revoked. But that's, again, distinct from the finding of guilty, because that's part of the administrative procedure or the procedure for the statutory revocation. That finding of guilty to those charges starts the process to the executive director, which is the statutory trigger that brings the offender back to the district court. So what happened here, as it should have, the finding of guilty was noted by the parole officer. The parole officer wrote it up and sent it on to the director of YOS, who approved the recommendation for revocation. That director then forwarded it to the executive director of the Department of Corrections, who also approved of that recommendation and forwarded it on to the district attorney, who then subsequently refiled it with the court.
Counsel, but obviously if the, here I think, what is it? It would be June 25th of 08, that it would have expired or whatever. Okay, what has to happen? Now, obviously the offenses happened prior to that date.
Correct.
Is that all that has to happen to then allow the process, either administrative or through the DOC, to go on as long as it needs to, or does something else have to happen? I recall, I can't remember the name of the case, but that there's a tolling that happens if the offender is arrested and in custody. Did that happen here? Does it have to be in the custody of YOS, or can be in custody based just on the charges? I'm asking you a lot of questions.
Sure.
I think you get the
gist. That was Epperson, and that, actually the case that you were involved in. That case was a circumstance where the offender was arrested and placed in jail, and that arrest told, or at least in that case, the arrest told the expiration, so to speak, of the YOS sentence.
For how long?
For as long as the administrative procedure took, and when I say administrative procedure, I mean the statutory procedure, took to get the offender to the district court, if that was the place they believed he needed to be.
What would be the cutoff point after which a revocation petition could not be filed?
According to the statute, and this is 18.1.3407(5)(c), the director has 60 days in which to complete the review process, and that's the time frame in which the offender needs to be brought to the district court, or at least that process needs to be forwarded to the district attorney. Let me distinguish, though, a certain circumstance that arises, and that is Miller and Epperson. There is some conflict between the two cases, and that conflict arises where Miller describes a circumstance where, unless the person can be certified as successfully completing, they haven't completed. The suspended DOC sentence remains in effect, and that person isn't successful and won't be discharged until it can be certified that they have been successful.
But do they normally, when nothing happens, is there a certification that they have successfully completed the YOS
Again,
portion of
the successful completion does occur, and there is a discharge summary performed, and that's all internal to DOC and YOS.
And so in these cases, if nothing happens, there is a document which says successful completion.
Correct. There's a
and
document.
And that's prepared by DOC.
Correct. And that's put in his file, and the person is just discharged. And
if for whatever reason that certificate weren't filed, does the period remain open then for revocation?
It depends on the circumstances. If the offender has not successfully completed and they began the statutory process for revocation, then the procedure would be allowed to proceed. And that was what happened in Miller. There was a mistaken discharge. In fact, the document was actually filed, and it was filed in mistake, but they had already begun the procedures, the statutory procedures for revocation.
So, counsel, there are actually two ways to get to the place you're arguing, if I understand your argument. First of all, if the offender is arrested and in custody, particularly through by the YOS, which at least the briefs, your brief seems to say happened here, according that you cite record sites that say that's what happened here.
And I have more thorough record sites to give to the court today, but go on.
Okay, so if that happened here, that would arguably toll the time until things were completed, and then when they're completed, even though it's after the four-year date, if he's revoked, he's revoked. The other way, and correct me if I'm wrong, is even if there isn't an arrest in custody, that under the Miller reasoning, and if there is not successful completion, as evidenced by a filing of a certificate, then he also can be revoked.
That's what the plain language of Miller says that. I mean, it doesn't go any further than that. It simply says the suspended sentence remains in effect, and unless the person can be certified, I use the term certified, it's not their word, but unless it can be shown that the person successfully completed, they are not discharged, and the court does not lose jurisdiction. Now, I grant you that's a difficult pill to swallow, and it's easier to follow and track this case in particular using the Efferson analysis and the tolling analysis. That tolling analysis is, and that's why I draw the distinction between the administrative sanctions and the statutory procedure, that tolling analysis refers to the statutory revocation process. The arrest began that process. The parole officer continued that process, and the director of YOS and the executive director of DOC moved that process along to its ultimate conclusion, which was the filing of the complaint or the recommendation for revocation to the district attorney, who subsequently filed with the court.
We've got about 2 minutes left if you want to reserve any time.
I will reserve. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, I'm Gregory Graff again. Let me start by addressing some of the questions that have already been raised, because I think I can maybe help clarify a few things. Judge Key, you asked a question about whether or not a person sentenced first to DOC and then YOS, and I agreed with the analysis of Mr. Jones. However, it's very important to point out that 18.1.3.407 specifically states that on the completion of the YOS sentence, the DOC sentence is completed. So the important analysis is, did the YOS sentence complete itself? And more importantly, and Judge Wheeler went through a very detailed analysis and held an evidentiary hearing and found that it had completed, and that the prosecution, whether through YOS or the DA's office, had not done anything to initiate a administrative or otherwise revocation of the YOS sentence until it had already suspended.
Doesn't the language of the statute include successful completion, however? How do we read that out?
Well, it does say successful completion, and one of the things that the court seems to be asking is, does some type of document need to be generated? And I have scoured the regulations and the statute itself, and the process for revocation as well as the process for the way a inmate for, or a youth who is in the program goes, that statute says absolutely nothing about there having to be some type of certificate generated. And more importantly, this court has already ruled that that certificate is really a non-important player, because I believe it was in Efferson, the defendant in that case was arrested and there was a discharge certificate issued, and the court basically found that that type of Scrivenger error or administrative error is not the act that is controlling. What is controlling is, was there an intent to start the revocation process, and did that occur before the person's sentence was completed? One of the main distinguishing characteristics of all the cases that were cited, in the Miller case, what had happened is that the district attorney's office, and this is an important distinction because it does talk about the fact that either YOS or the district attorney's office can initiate the act that would toll the statute. In the Miller case, the district attorney's office filed a detainer against the defendant before the defendant's YOS scheduled completion date had actually occurred. That is an important fact that the court noted. The district attorney's office took action before, and that action tolled the completion.
But that was that in the context, I may be getting the cases confused, the fact that there may have been an administrator error or a discharge that was improperly granted. This is to say, well, it doesn't matter because there was the detainer was charged. So I don't see how that helps you.
With all due respect, you are kind of getting the two cases.
Okay,
and I don't mean to be disrespectful.
No, no.
In Miller case, the district attorney's office took the action, and they took the action before the scheduled discharge date of YOS. In Efferson, the administrative action by YOS started, and the defendant was taken into custody for the YOS administrative process. And so you have the YOS taking one action at the same time some bureaucrat in the YOS, while the administrative process was ongoing, issued a discharge certificate. And the court said, I think the intent of this was, we're not going to allow a Scrivenger error to stop this process when clearly the government was taking actions to move. And I think the intent of all of this is, we're not going to allow the fact that it takes some time for the administrative process to take place, we're not going to treat that as something where a person can basically walk away from committing a crime while on probation. And that's actually, and that's an important distinction as well. In the Miller case and in the Efferson case, they went back to the Gore case, and the Gore case dealt with probation violations as this is the framework of what we're looking at. And there is a really good reason, Your Honor, to uphold Judge Wheeler's decision. Because if you follow the logic that's presented by the district attorney's office, this what I'm about to say to you could happen. Let's say this violation or some violation had occurred in Mr. Baxter's original YOS sentence in year one. This court is aware that whether or not it's DOC or YOS, there are constantly infractions that take place that result in administrative hearings. And those administrative hearings result in some type of sanction. In this particular case, it was clear that there was a wide panoply of sanctions that the hearing officer, the administrative law judge, can impose. And he chose the one that was least punitive. If that same thing had happened, say, 2 years before this discharge, under the theory presented by the district attorney's office, Mr. Baxter's sentence, YOS sentence, which would have terminated at 11:59 and 59 seconds on the 24th of June, would have occurred. And what happened in this case, the district attorney's office took absolutely no action until August 6th. And in fact, the hearing officer took no action until July 14th. That would be an absurd result when a inmate has already been sanctioned, his sentence terminates, and then, according to them, anywhere in the next 10 years, they can go and pull somebody in.
Counsel, as I understand it, and I know you'll correct me if I'm wrong, the ALJ really doesn't have the decision-making power to decide whether an inmate should be successfully complete YOS or not. That's the DOC's ultimate determination, that the ALJ is there for, you know, interim sanctions, things like that, and it can make a recommendation, which it didn't do here. But that's the only authority it has. So why is that binding?
Well, here's why that's important, Your Honor. Remember, and I think the timeline of events is somewhat important for the court. If nothing had happened in this case at 11:59 and 59 seconds on June 24th, 2008, Mr. Baxter's sentence would have terminated. And much like any trial court judge would know, like in a deferred judgment and sentence, these things happen administratively and automatically. There's no showing up for court. These things happen. But Mr. Baxter was charged on March 10th, of 2008, and that's 110 of the record, with the Muni Court violation. And this is very important, Your Honor. There was a evidentiary hearing in this case, and both the report of the parole officer, if I'm using that term, the YOS officer, and the YOS officer herself testified. And it was right in the report. Mr. Baxter went into custody for the municipal court violation on May 17th of 2006. This is well in advance of a month before his scheduled termination date. Didn't say he went into YOS custody. I mean, he's in YOS custody anyway, but as far as being in physically restrained custody, that hearing officer wrote in her own report he was arrested on the Muni Code violation. And he then was sentenced on the Muni Code violation on he was served with the administrative sanctions on May 28, 2008. This same YOS officer at any point in time could have started the procedure to revoke his YOS sentence and put a DOC sentence, but she did not. And Judge Wheeler made a point of saying that in his own finding, where he said you can't argue that you weren't on notice because you were at the Muni Court case and you were at the administrative discharge hearing, but she took no action to revoke. And what Judge Wheeler did is he applied Afferson and Miller and said, well, he's in custody, and he's in custody, and we're going to toll from the 25th and the 26th. I'm tolling those days because he is in your custody pending this hearing.
What is the test? Is it notice or is it custody?
Well, that's a very good point. If he had been given notice and he had been violated and never taken into custody, and the administrative sanction had just been the loss of good time credit, then there wouldn't have been any tolling, and on the 25th he would have been a free man. In this particular case, he was in custody, and Judge Wheeler correctly applied Miller and Efferson and said, well, you are in custody. Now, you're in custody for the Muni Code violation, but as of the 26th, the state had taken no action to revoke, and in fact waited they waited until July 14th before the letter initiating this whole process.
Counsel, I've got a factual question. Sure. Did the defendant stay in custody after the municipal charges were resolved?
Your Honor, that's really the most important question I think the court could have asked. And there's absolutely, and the evidence is no, he did not. And I say that because if you look on volume one, page 90, you see that this particular defendant is not actually remanded into custody until, I wrote the date down. He's not remanded until, I want to say it was September 9th, and I apologize. I had that written down, and I can't even read my own writing. But he wasn't remanded until September of that year. Now, if I have seen the prosecution's brief, and I looked at all the sites in their opening brief, and there's this statement, he was taken into custody of YOS, and he was taken into custody by the YOS officer. But when I read the cited pages, that's not what was said. It said he was taken into custody. It doesn't say who took him into custody. And there's nothing in the record about him remaining in custody after the 26th. And What's important is, Your Honor, and I can't give the site because I don't have a copy of the record. I had to borrow it because ADC doesn't give us the money for these things. But I do know that my own briefing was in the court record, and it was something that was submitted. The court asked me to do a memorandum. Then we had an evidentiary hearing, and I can cite from my own defendant's brief concerning revocation of YOS sentence, page 4, paragraph 13. In the current case, there is no evidence that Mr. Baxter was arrested or held in custody for the purposes of YOS sentence. So when I was first appointed to this case in October of this year, right away, looking at the timeline, and I, with all due respect, I'm claiming my own indice, I didn't know the law on this. I was not a YOS expert, but I looked and saw that there was a termination date and everything was initiated afterwards, and I raised the issue. And I know, also, I believe it's in the record that the prosecutor at that time said, well, we don't have to, the Efferson case. So the prosecution knew what the case law was, and if they didn't, they knew it after I filed the brief, and they know what the factual issues in Efferson. Efferson required the person to have been taken into the custody for the purposes of the revocation. And at that point in time, they had an evidentiary hearing. You would have thought that they would have had direct evidence saying, well, we've maintained him in custody for this amount of time. But even that, Your Honor, even if there was one scrap of evidence other than having to make inferences, which is what in retrospect on appeal, the prosecution is attempting to do, is there a valid reason why this case is distinguishable. I think in Miller and Efferson, the court was trying to do something very simple, which is you showed every intent of revoking, and you started that process before the sentence had expired. And we're not going to take the fact that some administrative scrivenger error occurred or that it takes you some time to type up a report. In this case, Your Honor, though, we have this individual being terminated on, should have been on the 25th, extended to the 26th, and they don't even get around until initiating a process until the 14th, which is when notification is sent to the district attorney's office. The district attorney's office doesn't do anything for another month and a half, and the YOS process then starts, and Mr. Baxter, I believe, reading my own handwriting, it's either the 9th or the 26th, I can't tell, but he's not even brought to court until that day. There's got to be some type of due process issues with this, because even in the prosecution's opening brief, there was a statement, oh, there's no timelines here. You know, when the courts start giving an inch for common sense, what typically happens, and I will tell the court, I think what happened here is there was some concern whether or not there should ever be a revocation, because if there wasn't any concern about that, it probably would have been initiated right after the original charges were brought in the municipal court. But remember, we're dealing with a kid who went into custody when he's 15 years old. And then when he's 19, he's put into phase 3, where he's, for the first time, he's been in basically an institution his whole adolescence, and then he's put into phase 3 where it's being treated like an adult. You expect people to fall off the wagon. And I think what happened here is there was some wrangling about whether or not they should do this, and they didn't make the decision to pull the trigger, and the administrative hearing officer didn't even recommend it. The court have any questions for me? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much.
Counsel raises the issue of the arrest, and as did this court, and there's no evidence to the contrary that he was ever released, first off. Secondly, the only evidence that exists is that the parole officer arrested the offender. On May 10th, 2008, he committed these offenses, and he was given a summons by the Glendale Police Department. This court can take judicial notice of the fact that a summons is not an arrest. It is given to an individual and they are released. That is further confirmed by page 312 and 313 of volume 1, the record, wherein the parole officer provides the police reports which say he was released to his mother. He was released by the Glendale Police Department. It was on May 17th, page 77 through 78, that Darla Jurens, the parole officer, arrested the offender and transported him to the Arapahoe County Jail, wherein he confessed to much of what had occurred to her. He was then in the Arapahoe County Jail, served with three Code of Penal Discipline charges on May 28th. That's page 78 of volume one. On June 19th, he pled guilty to child neglect in Glendale through a video conference. It's page 78 of that same volume. On June 26th, he was found guilty on counts one and two of his penal discipline charges, and he pleaded guilty to another count. Those are on pages 305 through 310. That's when the ALJ made the finding of guilt, and that started the process, and that's where the distinction occurs. What starts the process, what ends the process? The district court was confused and found that the ALJ ended the process. But in reality, the statutory revocation procedures begin with the finding of guilt. That's the ALJ's role in this, and that's what the ALJ found here, a finding of guilt. That triggered the parole officer's referral to the director. That was July 7th, a week later. That's pages 305, 308, and 310. Oh, strike that. The offender signed off on the ALJ's findings on the 7th of July. So he actually affirmed those findings on the 7th. It was on the 14th, a week later, that the parole officer refers this to the director. And that referral is for a revocation. That's page 86 of the record. On July 23rd, the director of YOS signs off on it. On July 29th, the executive director of DOC signs off on it. There's no lengthy delay occurring here. There is no procedural delay that is violative of due process. And
Counsel, your time has expired. Unless you have some more record sites you want to give the court.
There was two additional.
All
July
right.
29th.
And Counsel, I'll give you an opportunity to
you,
respond. Yeah.
July 29th, 2008, the executive director endorsed the recommendation, and that was forwarded to the district attorney. And on August 6th, the district attorney filed the motion to revoke, and that's page 72 of the record.
Mr. Graff, you can have a minute or two if you have record citations that you want to give to the court.
I do, Your Honor. Your Honor, the page, volume 1, 110, 111, is the trial court's factual findings on this, as I recall. And that's what I had put in my brief, so I'm going to direct the court to that. And I believe the earlier pages that were in cites page 78 from the prosecutor's brief was the report of the YOS officer. And it's very clear, I think it's on the bottom of her first page of her report, where she says he was taken into custody on the Muni Code violation. So in other words, that's what the record says. The other important thing is, and I think it was, I'm sure, not intentional, but there is no rule that says the process of the YOS converting to a DOC starts with an administrative law judge. Because if you look at what actually happened in Miller and what happened in the Valdez cases, the YOS revocation to and remission to DOC started without any type of administrative sanction like happened in this case. So they can happen independently. The DA could have filed a detainer. The YOS could have put him in custody for the purposes of starting this process, but none of that started until July 14th. Thank you.
Counsel, thank you very much for your arguments. We appreciate it. The case will stand submitted. We will send you a written opinion as soon as we can. That concludes the docket for this morning.